The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hey everybody, we got a great episode of The Command Zone coming up. We're joined by the Reverend En Fuego from BJ Shea's Geek Nation, and a very warm welcome to all of you that might be visiting our podcast today. So today Rev is here to discuss the logistics of Commander on Magic the Gathering Online and a brand new decklist for Voltron Shu Yun the Silent Tempest. It's pretty deadly. Today's show is brought to you by Blood Brothers 2, which I mentioned before on the show last week. It's a turn-based RPG on Apple and Android devices. Now, if you haven't checked it out yet, you can download it right now for absolutely free. One of my favorite words in the world is free, whether or not I'm cheating a creature in the play or just downloading something from the App Store. So if you've played other turn-based RPGs in the past, you're going to feel right at home with this game. It's also notably the sequel to the first title by the same name, and it's improved gameplay on pretty much every level. So the art is improved, the mechanics are smoother, and the game is just more polished as a whole. It's really enjoyable. I can't recommend it enough. If you're looking for a new game on your mobile device, check it out now at bloodbrothers2.com. That's the number 2, or download it from the App Store or Google Play. All right, on to the episode.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Hey everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Command Zone, episode number 29. My name is Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
And today we are joined by a very special guest, the Reverend En Fuego. Introduce
yourself. Howdy, howdy. Hey, yep, I am the Reverend En Fuego from BJ Shea's Geek Nation. You can find out what we do is www.bjgeeknation.com. You can find me on Twitter at Rev En Fuego. And our podcast normally just talks about a lot of geeky stuff, but every Tuesday we talk magic.
Yes, and it's a great podcast. You guys gave us an awesome shout-out in the last episode, so thank you very much for that. It was super appreciated.
Yeah, your guys' podcast, I've been listening to it for a while. Even the episodes that don't have to do with magic, because, you know, we people in the magic community, we tend to like the same things that are outside of magic. So
yeah.
You guys talk about a lot about sort of like a lot of comic book movies and TV shows and a lot of that kind of thing. So it's totally fun to not just only listen to magic podcasts.
Yeah, we can't all do like 3-hour set reviews every week. So,
oh my goodness.
Yeah, exactly.
I love giving a shout out to Limited Resources.
Oh, yeah.
But it frightens me when it's the 5-hour podcasts.
Yeah.
I still haven't finished their latest set review. Is that... Marshall. Sorry, dude.
I finished the rares and the mythic rares one because I was like, these are more interesting to me right now because I play Commander and like these are the cards I'm probably going to put in my deck.
But the review doesn't help you for Commander. It doesn't.
No, it doesn't at all. But I like hearing him talk about it anyway because it's always good to know how to judge because there's such a different power scale level. That's a whole nother episode, of course.
Yeah.
So, Rev, do you want to talk about, like, I know you're a big EDH player, but do you want to talk about your history with the format? Like,
Yeah. It was kind of interesting because I'd heard of it before, but I wasn't wholly interested in, and I was doing a lot of Standard at the time, and this was right around World Wake, mm-hmm. and so it was still kind of early in its inception, you know, mm-hmm. you have heard about it and trying to figure out what would be cool, and lo and behold, I open a foil Rexxiel, the Risen Deep.
That's a commander.
It's a commander, and it's a build-around commander, and it was like, okay, he loves the graveyard, what do you do? Well, one of my favorite decks of all time have been mill decks. Uh-huh. I love doing it. And of course, what's more of a challenge to do than make a mill deck that has to revolve around commander decks, which are 100-card decks. Mm-hmm. So you got to kind of make that an interesting way to go about it. And so with Rexxiel's ability, it's like, okay, I'll just start casting my opponent's spells, which means I can also animate stuff if I start getting rid of that. So I got into a reanimation and then just, you know, casting all of my opponent's spells cards.
Nice.
So, and then it was all downhill from there?
Yeah, pretty much. I played that for a long time. I loved it. When Guild Pack came out, I updated it to Lazav, and it's pretty much my favorite commander deck. out of my old school ones up until actually last week, I think.
Nice.
Which is going to be, is it supplanted by the deck we're going to talk about later?
Absolutely, 100%.
So we're gonna talk about Shu Yun later because Rev's got a pretty sweet Shu Yun build.
I'm so excited.
We've been seeing Twitter pics for a while now, so there's some pretty ridiculous stuff going on.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited.
Now, how many EDH decks do you have, Rev?
Currently, right now, I have about six. I've got Duretti, which I don't ever play because it's Artifact Recursion and then just Mass Land Destruction.
Ooh, Armageddon.
Oh, so it's Make Friends deck.
Yeah, makes lots of friends.
Mono Red, Tectonic Edge, Ruination, Wildfire, Burning of Xingyu.
Do you have Blood Moon in there?
All of those. And then, yeah, just monster.
I'm glad some of us are having fun,
you
Josh.
You monster.
But, yeah, I only bring that out if I want to, like,
those
if
are your
someone
two,
I don't
are those
like.
Your two mean decks?
Yeah. My Zedra deck is kind of chaotic, where I just kind of make everything go on forever.
Nice. I like the sound of that.
Yeah, and then give you terrible things like Grid Monitor so you can't cast your creature spells, or Illusions of Grandeur, so it comes into play, I gain 20 life, and then I give it to you, and then somehow I bounce it back or destroy it, so you lose the 20 life, and usually ends with that, or like if I can get Venzer out with that, that means I can just start doing that every turn, gaining 20 and someone losing 20.
Man, that is dirty.
That seems pretty good.
And then I've got, like, a lot more along the lines of my themes. I've got a Thraxamundar zombie deck where all the creatures are zombies or mad scientists. I got a couple of mad scientists in there. Mm-hmm. And then even like with that, it's black, blue, red, but like the reds are like only spells like Blasphemous Act or like Grimoire of the Dead for my artifacts, just so it's kind of like a spooky feel.
Oh, so that's sort of like your Vorthos-y deck?
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Sounds like you've got, you run the gamut
novel.
Here.
Yeah, you definitely have some interesting fun decks. We should play.
I know you play. Are those like all decks that are on Magic Online, or are some of those
no,
real?
No, those
or?
Are my physical ones.
Uh-huh.
Now I have a ton. Like, okay, I have even more like decks for Magic Online. One, two, three. I have about 12 decks right now.
Ooh,
on Magic
nice.
Online.
Wow.
Because, well, here's the cool thing about Magic Online is that you only need one of any card because you don't have to flip them out between decks. They can just be used.
Oh, right. Right. So one Sol Ring across every deck.
Exactly. Or some of the harder spells. I like, for some reason, all of my blue decks have Omniscience in them. Even though it
all
costs 10, usually I can figure out a way to get it out.
I thought you were going to say, like, I don't know, Counterspell or Swan Song or so.
Counterspell is in almost all of them. And I don't. And a lot of the decks are blue just because, I mean, come on,
blue's
the
awesome.
Best color.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
Sorry, Jimmy. Blue's the best color, which, you know, Jimmy doesn't like.
Clearly, Lightning Bolt is the best card in Magic Gathering. So red.
Which is weird because it's terrible for Commander.
Oh, it is the worst Commander card you could ask for.
But, like, even in my non-blue decks, I have a black-red Tymarit the Murder King, is all of the black and red either, like, reanimate effects or steal effects, like Threaten, Mark of Mutiny, Act of Treason. Up
steal
to you know, cheering instigator.
Sack it.
Do you have a Marchesa deck?
No.
She's my favorite deck that I have.
He basically built the same deck as your Timurit deck, I think.
Yeah, it's just threaten and remove everything with the addition of blue.
Oh yeah, that would be fun. Yeah, this was one of those ones where, because if I get an idea for a deck or I'll see a commander, I'll be like, all right, well, this is interesting. The beauty of Magic Online is you can go to the search. And you can just put display quantity at 0, and it'll show you every card that's in there for those specific colors or whatever, so you can go down to all the colors. And at that point, you're just kind of running through. It's almost like running through Gatherer online. Mm-hmm. You can just find any card that works with that. So yeah, I find, you know, I'll look at, like, a Traitor's Blood, and I'll, like, all right, see some of the keywords. Trample, Haste, Gain Control. Put it in the search and find all of those that work with that.
Yeah.
And then, boom, you've got a total theme deck right there.
Yeah, so it sounds like deck building is a lot easier. Well, one of the biggest headaches about deck building in real life is just, like,
taking cards out, putting them back.
Yeah, it's just taking the boxes down off the shelf and opening them up and figuring out where everything is.
Yeah.
Yeah, before Treasure Cruise got banned in Modern, I had 3 set aside. I thought I did because I was going to put them in my Splinter Twin deck. Mm-hmm. And then I was looking everywhere. I tore all of my boxes looking for them. And then I realized I had put them all in my Commander decks.
Well, just hey, they can stay there now.
Yeah, nice they can stay there. They have a happy home there now.
Yeah, nice warm place right there.
Well,
but yeah,
your splitter
so,
twin deck is probably a lot better now.
Yeah.
It's
definitely poised to be better for that, but yeah.
Yeah. Tarmogoyf came rushing back onto the scene, didn't he?
Oh, man. I was just looking at a couple of those on eBay, wondering if I should pull the trigger.
Well, I think we got to wait till...
I think we have to wait for Modern Masters,
Masters 2 and see what
that's going to look like. Well, seems to be pretty good, too.
Tassiger seems awesome. Oh, I pulled a foil Tassiger just the other
day. What?
Yeah.
Josh, that's like $20 to $30 right now. Woo-hoo.
No, that's telling you to make a commander deck. When you pull a foil legendary...
Yeah, like Rexio.
Absolutely.
I think I might.
I'm scared because Jimmy just built this Anafenza deck that he's basically playing like constantly. So I don't know if the Tassiger deck like right now is a good idea in our playgroup.
Well, the Anafenza only gets cast when I see another commander I don't
like. Right, but if I play Tassiger, you're just a caster on turn three every time. So
yeah, it'd be great. You can get back all your lands.
Just gonna wait for our meta to cycle a little, and then maybe I'll build it.
Yeah, just
so,
maybe.
Well, this is really interesting because we haven't talked about Magic Online.
At all, really.
Really before, yeah. Jimmy and I play a lot of MTGO, but we mostly draft and play limited. So, you know, I think Commander has... There's some tough things about it when I've tried it a couple times. So how do you find, like, the communication? Like, the social aspect of the game, I feel like, has a little bit of trouble online.
It's a... Yeah, with Magic Online, I mean, you guys have played it enough to you know the guys who get super salty.
Just online anything.
Yeah,
when there's no face-to-face interaction, it's real easy to get your emotions up.
Yeah, so most of the time I really don't pay attention to the chat.
Right.
Just because, I mean, sometimes some people try to talk with it, and you'll kind of get a vibe for that. But for the most part, if you're like actually communicating with people, they're usually yelling at you because you're ruining their time because you're not letting them cast their big giant spell,
right.
Leaving them alone to go infinite and kill you.
They're trying to do a
so does
combo
it take
off.
The political aspect out a little bit? Do you find that it's just sort of more? I would think that would make the game more aggro in general then if there was less communication.
Yeah, and it can be because like somewhat like if you attack somebody, they could just be like, all right, I understand why you're attacking me because I'm the only person that's open to. The other end of the spectrum, which is this is all out nuclear war.
Everyone cast everything and go nuts.
I hate you.
Yeah.
And a lot of those times people will try not to do stuff. And I'm not like about that. So like when I've been doing with Shu Young, usually I'll be able to like kill someone because I'll just come out of nowhere, do it and just wipe someone out in one turn. But then of course I'm done.
Right, everyone just turns and looks at you like, wait a minute.
If you see somebody do that, then you have to because it's like, it's like, well, if he can kill somebody on one turn where it looks like he can't, then he could just kill me at any moment.
Yeah.
And what I try to do is it's pretty much a glass cannon, but if they don't have a lot of removal or I can pull some sort of hexproof shenanigans, then it gets really frightening for them. But I'll try to take out, usually I try to take out the person who's playing blue and green.
Yeah.
Because usually they're the cheekiest. And if you let them have enough time to set up, and then no. Or if you're doing five color or Alloro, those are the first targets.
Alloro, just sitting there being like, I dare you. I dare you to take a beat. I'll be fine.
The best part about Alloro, though, is 21 commander damage.
Yeah.
So do you, when you play online, do you play often with the same people, or is it always different people?
Can you
develop
something?
A play group
if you just like go to the play lobbies... And they have them all set up for if you go to like constructed open play and just for fun, and you can set the format for what you want. You can do like one-on-one multiplayer. A lot of times people go and it's like the 3-6 free-for-all and they'll get four players. And sometimes even the comments say, you know, four players only, or some people will try to say no counterspell, infinite combo decks. We want to have fun.
Oh, cool.
But at that point, it really doesn't matter because you can put in any deck. You're just kind of playing by the honor system.
Right.
And if you already don't care about getting yelled at.
At that point, you really don't pay attention to chat if you're bringing the counter
spell. How long do games take on Magic Online?
It's a slog sometimes, depending on the deck. I mean, if you're going in, because sometimes, I mean, if I want to like take forever, if I just want to spend a night hanging out, maybe I don't have anything planned and I'm just chilling watching a TV show and playing Magic, I'll like play Zedru, because Zedru is easily a two-hour deck.
Oh, wow.
Where I can just,
you just stall the game out for a long time?
Yeah, you just kind of go through all the turns. And it's like, if it's four players, it can be kind of long, but that's about it.
Do you find that games online are faster than real life games or vice versa?
No, because you got to go through all the steps. Mm-hmm. One of the keys you can do in this is if you press F8, it is an auto yield for everything. It's as long as you can't do anything, you'll just pass priority.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
So what a lot of you do in the early turns, since it's all those are like setup turns pretty much, it's like you'll tap all of your lands, so you can't cast any spells or even tap your lands. Hit F8 at the beginning, it'll have that set up the whole time, and you'll just burn through until it's your turn again.
Gotcha. That's actually really interesting. I could see that. I mean, obviously, holding up a two-mana counterspell is something that you could broadcast a lot more if that's sort of the...
But then you got to sit there and click, like... basically, okay, every time anybody casts anything, you have to be like, okay, that goes, that resolves, that resolves.
For me, I have almost all of my stops set up because there'll be that one time where I needed it to be at that one moment where I had to, you know, stop them at their upkeep to tap something, and then if I don't have it, then I lose and I get mad.
Now, what do you think about the general player, I guess, quality is kind of a weird word for it, but just sort of like, are there more spiky players playing online? Do people like one-on-one stuff, or is it more people that just don't have a play group, for instance?
It really varies because, and it's the whole, that's the big problem with Magic Online is everyone has their version of fun. Mm-hmm. And so someone's version of fun is playing an all land destruction deck. There's a couple of them floating around there. Someone's version of fun is playing Slivers, which can be fun, but also can put a, you know, big target on you because it's Slivers and it gets scary. Sometimes it turns into kind of a flavor of the week. When Nekusar came out, there was a ton of Nekusar decks. And a lot of them were built the same with, you know, using Teferi's Puzzle Box and massive draw effects just to wipe people out. Mm-hmm. And so people, there'll be people who will, you know, kind of scoff and be like, oh, another, you know, such and such deck. I've seen a couple of Shu Yuns this week already after I've been going crazy with it. So
it's starting to pick up.
Yeah, yeah.
You're a trendsetter.
People have just realized just how powerful it was. And I was just like, I hadn't been paying attention to a lot of them, but listening to you guys talk about it, and I was like, yeah, he's a more insane version of Rafiq.
Yeah, he can go so wide comparatively. It's pretty insane. Oh,
yeah, it's pretty hilarious, actually. I was able to pull a... killed a guy with a 27-27 Bruna.
Wow. I don't even think I've ever gotten a
creature that gave
big.
Double strike to?
No, he didn't have double strike because I had to do so many other things, and it was really chaotic. But
and you didn't need it, evidently?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I didn't need it, but it would have been a lot of fun. I've only heard of the rumblings of Eldrazi Conscription in Standard for a short while. Uh-huh. It was all based off of the Sovereigns of Lost Alara Eldrazi Conscription combo, where you can just go tutor it right up.
Yep. Right, and just play it.
Yeah, and it's just the most fun thing to do with this deck. Like, yeah, when I can do it now, it's just so much fun. Just to play Eldrazi Conscription is just hilarious.
Annihilator is also just such a mean mechanic.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty intense. Well, I'm really glad that you built this deck because I, just in a sort of like a fever dream, I like built something really fast. I just took everything out of a minor and I was like, this looks good, and I don't even have the commander yet. That's how excited I am.
You don't have a Shuyun?
No, I was going to borrow yours.
Yeah. By borrow, everybody, he means just take.
Forever.
I mean, he means just own. Yeah.
And then defeat you with it, hopefully.
Probably. I'm going to take your Shuyun and hit you in the face with it.
Yeah. Well, stop hitting yourself with your own shoe.
The crazy thing about my Shuyun was I had missed a modern tournament, so I came back home and I decided to draft, and I opened, I have a foil Shuyun now. And it was that me, nice. I had to. Like, it's Magic Online.
That is a sign, right? That's the universal sign for you got to build it.
Yeah.
I've opened a bunch of I think I've opened like four. I gave two away at pre-releases. Guys were like, I want to build a commander deck. And I was like, here.
Dang it. Flavor of the week indeed. But it's okay. Mine will be the best. I don't know about that.
We'll have to have you play heads up against Rev's
interesting
deck. Although, Rev, does your deck only exist online?
It only exists online right now.
How are we supposed to play against it in Vegas, then?
I love this one so much, I'm going to try to build it before Vegas.
All right, deal.
I've got a lot of the cards. I don't, like Magic Online, like, with when they did Vintage Masters, made it a lot easier to get stuff like dual lands.
Yeah.
Like, the power level of my paper one won't be comparable just because how easy it is to get dual lands now online.
Yeah, true.
But
that's another upside of Magic Online is a lot of those sort of staple cards recently because of Vintage Masters are...
Yeah, and that's like what I said before about going through like a deck and going and putting even though I don't own a card, I'm going to put it in here, putting the quantity at zero to figure out the best deck that I want to build, is you can take all the cards you don't own, like right-click, add them to your wish list, and you can just find them pretty easily online. And sometimes the cards are like 4 cents.
Yeah, that's always nice about... I mean, again, that's one of my favorite things about Commander in general. And I'm guessing the same goes for Modo, where you can just... Some things are just absurdly cheap, but are just the perfect card for a deck.
Yeah, and I mean, it's so easy now, I mean, even with paper products, to buy cards online and have them shipped to you.
Yeah.
Well, the great thing about Modo, though, is, like, you can get it in less than 30 seconds.
Yeah, you don't have to wait for it.
Yeah, like, if you want to build that deck, like the deck we talked about last week, I ordered all the cards, and I'm still getting cards in the mail, and I probably won't be able to finish building it until the end of this week, because that's just how long it takes the cards, which is fast, considering like five or six years ago. But Modo, it's literally like you make the deck list, and then in an hour, you can have all the cards.
Yeah, and be playing online with it, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I've done that a lot.
So, moving on to something you wanted to talk about, which is an interesting idea we haven't talked about really on the show, was themes in EDH was something you said you were sort of...
Yeah.
You had something to say about. And I guess the first question is, you know, what do you mean by theme when you're talking about...
Well, themes can mean anything that just had... Well, I mean, like a theme. Like with my Shu Yang... I went with an enchantment matters theme. So I'm going with auras. That's just because I'm looking for, you know, what they call the Voltron, where you just load up one guy with something huge and you punch through. Another theme would be my, like I said, Nekusar, which is just draw a whole bunch of spell decks. So there's a lot of Wheel of Fortune effects, a lot of it's like Time Spiral, big sorts of things like that. To even something like my Thraxamundar, which is zombies. And up until recently, it was every creature type had to be a zombie. But now I've gone, and I think just because of Geesa, Ghoulcaller Geesa, and Stitchcrafter, I put those guys in, and then the old Rune Master guys for Mad Scientists. So it's like the horror theme, or just some way to get it down to, I guess, a reasonable amount of cards, because Magic has so many cards. If you just went and tried to just put in all of the good stuff, you're going to kind of have the same decks all the time.
Yep.
Yeah, if you just go value cards, you're just going to have, you know, Jace the Mind Sculptor and Tarmogoyfs and
Flickerwisps and all those just sort of...
Just the value cards, I think, you know, a theme is like an organizing principle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, we've talked about it before as like a mission statement or a thesis statement.
Yeah, okay.
And usually when we're deck teching, we'll have segments that say enchantments matter. And I think matter is the important word here, is because for most decks, like having a theme or a mission statement or a way that you can focus your attention / deck building into one thing to build around it in a lot of ways is a nice thing for a theme.
I think, like, you know, a question we've had from some people, though, is how you decide upon what that is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you go... Rev, how do you go about, like, figuring out, you know, what your theme's going to be?
I look, it's kind of be one of those things where it's like, I need to know what I want to accomplish with the commander. Anyone can win, like, Magic. And this is where I go Uber Johnny with
anyone
the commanders.
Anyone can win Magic.
It's true. Doesn't mean that everyone will, just that everyone can.
It's just a deep it's a deep thought.
So I figure out, like, what would be the coolest, neatest ways to be able to do that? And sometimes with, like, Shu Yang, it's just attacking with one gigantic dude.
Yeah.
With Timerid, it's killing you with your own guys and then smacking you in the face with them. With Zedru, it's usually making you concede. Because
that is, that's great.
One of the ways that I win with the deck, and it's just, is I play Knowledge Pool after I have
like my
an effect
there.
Out that will stop them from being able to use the secondary ability. Something like a Possibility Storm, or, Possibility Storm is the same thing as that, but use like Teferi to make it so they can only cast with, it's just basically bending the rules to make you concede because you get mad. And essentially what happens with that is that with a Knowledge Pool or a Possibility Storm, and Teferi out, they can't cast the second spell because you can
you can only cast
a spell when there's nothing on the stack, but Knowledge Pool's ability is on the stack. And so people then are like, well, how does that work? And then you have to pull out the rules, and then they get mad because you've used rules to beat them. And people don't like that. People do not like that at all.
Yeah, and they just
Knowledge Pool
there.
Is actually really fun if you don't abuse it in that way and you just literally let the card play out how it's supposed to.
Yeah.
Then it still screws everything up. People still get mad because they're like, we had a game the other night and I got Knowledge Pool out. And we
you
were
got everything out that game somehow.
Yeah.
It was so chaotic.
Well, I got Knowledge Pool out. Let me read Knowledge Pool really quick. It's six. It's a six-costed artifact. It says, imprint, when Knowledge Pool enters the battlefield, each player exiles the top three cards of his or her library. Then, whenever a player casts a spell from his or her hand, that player exiles it. If the player does, he or she may cast another non-land card exiled with Knowledge Pool without paying that card's mana cost. So you don't get the spell that you cast.
You get another one.
You actually cast one of the spells that was exiled with Knowledge Pool. So basically you have to cast a spell to cast another spell
that's not the one that you
want to
cast.
There's like a group pool of spells that you can choose one of them.
I love the idea of it.
It's
I think
awesome.
It's hilarious, especially for a game like Commander where you're just going to get some wonky things in there.
Some people just can't deal with it though. Like Eli, who's our editor on the show, he was playing and he just looked at it and goes, "I'm just not going to cast anything." And I'm like, "Dude, just cast something." He's like, "Why?" I'm like, "You have a 2-drop creature in your hand. Look, there's a 5-drop creature in the Knowledge Pool. You can just get it for that 2 mana." And he's like, "No, I'm just not going to do it." He's like, "Just screw you."
I liked it. Sort of like the I abstain from this measure.
Yeah.
And you guys can have fun until someone
the rest of us were like, "I'm
going to
cast this. What's in there? What can I get?" I'll take that.
The funny thing is that you also had humility in the other combo off, so no one could cast a creature. So it didn't even matter. I was like, "I want to cast something, but then if I cast anything else, it just dies." So
humility is one of those cards that the layers and the confusion with that one is like, that's card that I won't personally play in paper.
I found myself asking the exact same question about the card every time. I was like, "Wait, so if I play this card, you're saying
it's just a
nothing happens?"
The answer is always the same.
Yeah, it's like, wait, what about this one that has an enter the battlefield effect?
No, it's a 1-1.
Oh, dang it.
Yeah. And it's like that card and like Warp World or Scrambleverse effects.
Warp World.
I'll play them online because you don't have to worry about going through the steps of everyone shuffling and revealing and figuring out how that works. It does it by itself. That's another beauty of having Magic online.
Tutoring must be much easier.
Well, just shuffling and moving cards from like where you would physically move them is a lot faster on Magic online. Yeah.
At the same point, trying to do infinite combos takes forever because you have to go through every step. So you can't really do Kiki Pod or Splinter Twin or anything like that. Well, not pod anymore.
Because in real life, you just demonstrate the loop.
And then they would concede.
Yeah. But on Magic Online, you literally have to click OK like 1,000 times.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a Melek, Is It Paragon commander deck. And I've got the evil, Mana Flare, High Tide, Palancron.
I love Palancron.
Yeah.
And I'll start doing it and just getting infinite mana, and it's taking forever, and people will just vote me out. You can vote to kick people out, too.
Oh, wow.
What?
Yeah.
Are they just beat from the game? They can't even that's it? You're done?
Yeah, well, they realize that, like, I'm just going to be sitting there kind of dirtling for a while, and it's going to take forever. and if everybody
if they kick you
agrees,
out, the game their game still keeps going and you're
their
just
game
gone.
Still keeps going. I'm just done. They've literally kicked you out. Everyone has to vote for it, and everyone
can
has to vote
can we do that
yes.
in real life next time we play, Josh?
But no, because that's more probably going to happen to me.
Well, yeah, because you cast Humility. Who else would we kick out?
It wasn't Humility that was a problem. It was the combination of that with Aether Flash that was the problem.
They just killed everything as soon as it entered.
Yeah.
That was great. That's really interesting. I guess that kind of brings the social aspect back to Modo a little bit, because you don't want to be that guy that everyone wants to kick out.
I guess.
Yeah, for the most part, you don't want to. Sometimes if I'm in a bad mood, then sure, why not? take it out of some poor soul on Modo.
Yeah. Well, the worst is they just go play another game, so.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, the downside to me is so much of what I like about Commander is the politics, is like lobbying people at the table, like, "Hey, man, you don't want to do that to me. Look at that over there. That's really scary. He's going to kill you next turn if you don't do something about that." Part of the game is like so much of the fun for me.
Yeah. I like the threat and then denying that you're a threat. That's always fun.
Yeah, I like literally like just playing games. Like, "No, that's not going to do anything. Like, what are you talking about?"
And two turns later, I win.
Yeah. Somebody's like, "No, that's one piece of a combo and he's going to do this." And you're like, "No, that other card's not even in this deck. What are you talking about?"
Just bold-faced lying.
"I don't have that card. Of course I don't have. I'm casting that card right now. How did that happen?"
Yeah. So back to the themes topic. One thing I wanted to ask to you, and I have I built a couple of decks that are tribal. So tribal is one of the themes you can do, like zombies, humans, goblins. And my Norrin the Wary deck is now sort of goblin tribal. And it used to be Kiki Jiki. And so what happened is the power level sort of went down a fair amount.
Yeah.
How do you personally find like a balance? Because obviously you can make a super thematic deck that's worth those to the max, but just struggles to get off the ground. Or you could do one that has that mix of, for instance, you were saying you put in Gisa and stuff in the zombie deck.
Yeah, with like with the zombie deck, that was one of those ones where I have so much fun playing just because I just poop out a ton of zombies, and it's amazing, and it's fun to see just having all your tokens out there and doing that. But at the same point, zombies don't fly. So if anything flies, I lose.
Yeah.
Or if they have board wipes, which everyone has board wipes, so I lose. So it's just one of those where I know the power level isn't that great. So if I know, like, I've got friends who sometimes don't always play with a lot of board wipes, I'll play that one a little bit more. But for the most part, like, I mean, with Magic Online, it gets kind of crazy because you can just go absolutely nuts and have the same cards. Like, I think all of my blue decks have Time Spiral because I've got one. And I want to use it.
Yeah, you may as well.
But with the power levels of those, it's like you just kind of have to figure out what works and what doesn't work in terms of if it works with a theme and you're having fun with it, cool. But if it's the one card you're always tutoring for to win the games, maybe take it out just so you have a little bit of something else to do with your deck.
Right. Yeah, that's something we had Jason Alt from Brainstorm Brewery on, and that was one of his big statements, and I think it's a good one, which is like, if the game is ending in the same way every time when you win, then maybe your deck needs a little retuning. Yeah. It might be too powerful. That might be a sort of symptom of it being too powerful.
Yeah.
If it's just got this one way that wins every time. So
it's also boring too, right?
Yeah, and it's one of the things that's like, and it always comes to, you know, like the gray areas of what you consider sportsmanship and sporting and whatnot. Like, I don't like running in a lot of my Edric deck, which would pretty much abuse it. I don't like running Deadeye Navigator.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's just there's so much potential for abuse, and all you have to do is have, you know, with blue-green, okay, I have an acidic slime. Now I just win because I blow up everything.
Right.
And, I mean, if you want to end the games that way, that's one thing. But if you're just sitting around doing kind of beer and magic sort of stuff, you know, hanging out, having some fun, that's why I play Commander. It's kind of the same version of, you know, poker night.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree. On the same note, I'm always quick to say, like, when somebody does that, you know, Deadeye Navigator combo with whatever and kills, like, it's not that big a deal. Don't get too mad. Like,
you're
going to play a lot of games of Magic in your life. Just shuffle up, play another one. Don't be so scared to play another game.
You won that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, if it happens every single game with the same matter, then it's like, okay, all right, I'm...
Yeah, maybe you should help your friend make a new deck.
Yeah. Or just get rid of a couple of key cards. And yeah, I do like that. I think that's a really good theory in general, just... Because, I mean, like, look, this isn't your, you know, this isn't like Stoneblade and Legacy. You're not trying to just get a Batterskull out and win with that every single game, you know. Like, there are other, this is Commander. You have one of every single card. So if you're searching just for a couple of them.
It's one of the things that spikes don't get and why they sort of revile the format in a lot of ways is because that is actually the goal in Legacy, in Modern, in Standard, is actually to win the same way every time. Like, that's why the decks are trying to reach the highest level of consistency possible. Like, that's the whole point.
Yeah, that's why you get four copies of something,
yeah,
right?
That's the whole point of playing competitively is, like, you want to kill them pretty much the same way every time. Like, if you could find the deck that killed them in the same way every time, that's what you want to build. But
And with Commander, I mean, you can make a theme deck and have all of the tutors, but that's the thing I don't like about... I don't run a lot of tutors in mine either, in a lot of my decks. I'll run, you know, the good draw spells. I'll run Brainstorm. I'll run... the different ones, but I don't run the tutors because then I just end up looking for the same things. I kind of like being surprised. One of the cards I run in a lot of my red decks, even though it drives everyone nuts and it usually makes me lose, is Possibility Storm, which I already mentioned, because suddenly everyone's game plan is completely out the window because whatever spell they cast, they have to go find one of the same type, but they don't know what it is unless they can really stack their deck every time.
Right. Yeah. It changes everything. One thing I do is I do run a lot of tutors, but I don't run a ton of deck where I have like combos that involve the commander. So what happens is I have to go tutor for like one piece, but then I still, you know, I'd have to find the other piece, or, you know, I don't actually run a lot of two card infinite combos either. But I think when you build like a deck that's really revolving around an enchantment or two, then it's like your enchantment is kind of like your commander. Like, that's the card you want to get out.
Yeah.
But you need the tutor to go get the enchantment. So, you know, you can't even really start doing stuff sometimes until you get that card or the card that lets you find that card. You know, I think that's one way to sort of dial the power level down out of your deck is, like, don't base it on the commander. Because the commander is just a card that you always have access to. And if you've got, you know, Niv-Mizzet and you've got one of two cards, you know, if you just happen to draw it, you can just win.
Yeah, Ophidiana or whatever.
Yeah. So that's in that deck, tutors are way too powerful because there's two cards that you literally just win on the spot.
Yeah.
And if you put in two or three tutors, now there's five cards in the deck that you just win on the spot.
Yeah, I guess for my I just sort of threw all my Planeswalkers into a deck and I realized that it doesn't work unless I have doubling season out. Otherwise, it's just the power level's way too low. So that's like the one card I have to get.
If you get a planeswalker or two out, like everyone just attacks you.
Yeah, exactly. So you don't have much of a
if you don't have doubling season, then there's no, the upside's gone, but the downside's still there, which is like people just scared of planeswalkers.
Rightly so.
Yeah, I wanted to make a Corona, the False God 5-color deck, because I would use Corona as the commander and then have the entire Pantheon and then all the Planeswalkers. I realized this was way too expensive to actually do on paper, so I kind of threw that away. But that was kind of another theme that I had, that you have the upper echelon. I mean, I was making theme decks back. I had a white-black Angels and Demons that went, and I had, like, an Archangel and some Black Demon as the top lieutenants, all the way down to like a couple knights on each side with flanking. So I had like a whole deck like that. So I love kind of telling stories with decks in sort of geeky, dorky ways.
It's one of the cool things about our format is there's just so many ways to go about.
Like,
and you can always make something competitive too. You can have cards in there that may not be awesome, you know, or like you're going to want, it's going to pass all parts of the quadrant chest or whatever, but if it fits the Vorthos and is really has like a couple of really fun or cute interactions, then like it's totally worth it.
And the politics is the thing that can even it out for you, right?
Yeah, like, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
It's the one format where like playing a crappy card out can actually help you, because it's like I said last week, you know, I play Market Festival in a lot of decks. It's not a very good card, and it actually helps you. Like you play it and people go, well, that's a crappy card. That guy doesn't know what he's doing. And then all of a sudden you're not a threat, you know? So there can be advantages to, you know, playing Vorthosi and playing cards that maybe are suboptimal.
All my cards are suboptimal until I play them, Josh. Then they're fully optimized. Actually, that's why I like Shuyin a lot.
Means.
I have no idea either. I was thinking of Shuyin because everything that you do cast in this deck is like, guess what? That card just has some extra text on it, and it's great.
Yeah, the extra text is kill you.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's talk about it. Okay, let's get into it.
Before we launch into the Shuyin deck tech for today, we're taking a few seconds to let you know that the show today is brought to you by the new mobile RPG, Blood Brothers 2. One thing I always find myself doing in Los Angeles is waiting. So whether it's with a friend in a car in traffic, and trust me, there is a lot of traffic, or a waiting room for an audition, I'm pretty much constantly looking for something to help pass the time in an enjoyable way, and my mobile device is literally a lifesaver, whether or not I'm looking just something up online, building a new deck list, or playing a game. And one of those games I'm playing right now is Blood Brothers 2. It offers me a lot of what I'm looking for, in that you can pick it up and put it down and play it for just short bursts at a time, and there's also an incredible amount of customization within the game when you want to go deeper, since you're always trying to build and improve your army to defeat foes. And we're not just talking about computer AI, there's an emphasis on player versus player action in the game, so if you're interested at all, go check out BloodBrothers2.com, that's the number 2, or just download the game for free on the App Store or Google Play. Thanks again, everyone, for listening to the show. We are super stoked, as always, to be able to bring on episode-by-episode sponsors to help us keep producing the content. Now, let's talk about some Voltron Shuyin. Or is it Shuyun? Ah, whatever. Shuyin the Tempest. Well, before we start, we should tell everyone what this commander does. So, Shuyin, we talked about it in our Fate Reforged review. It's a rare from Fate Reforged. And it's a legendary creature. It's the Jeskai Khan.
From 1,000 years ago.
The olden days, yeah. And his name is Shuyin, the Silent Tempest. He's 2 and a blue for a 3/2 legendary creature, human monk. So any of you guys that want to build a monk tribal, I guess you could also do that here. So he has prowess. And to remind you what that is, whenever you cast a non-creature spell, this creature gets +1/+1 until end of turn. So non-creature spells, enchantments, sorceries, instants, planeswalkers, artifacts, all that stuff. And the big text, and why, of course, we're talking about him today, is whenever you cast a non-creature spell, you may pay 2 Boros. So that's red, white, red, white. You can either pay red, 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 white, or white, white. And if you do, target creature gains double strike until end of turn.
The big thing there is target creature. So it doesn't have to be Shuyun that gets the double strike.
It can be any. It could even be an opponent's creature if you are feeling crazy.
Or you could do it when one of your opponents is attacking another opponent.
Ooh, yes, that's right.
So
yeah, you can give other commanders that double strike if you wanted to.
Jeez, what a fast way to end the game in their favor, huh?
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
Well, it's your favor, too. I mean,
right,
you eventually...
Right. It's like, great, you're tapped
Highlander,
out.
Highlander, there can
Here
be
comes,
only one.
Yeah. And the nice thing is that Shuyin is a Jeskai general because he has... the hybrid mana in his description box, and you have to use that as part of his rules text. So that makes him red, white, and blue. Go
Which
America.
Is awesome.
It is awesome because this
and mono blue would have been a little less great.
Yeah, I think
it would be considerably less great. So when you read this, you know, we talked about it already, Rev. You chose to go with enchantments, but there's really a lot of ways you could go with Shuyin. Like you could do all equipment Because those are all non-creature spells, so they'll do the same thing. You could go a lot of instants and sorceries, you know, combat tricky stuff. So do you want to explain, you know, why you chose the path that you chose?
Just listening to you guys talk about him and then talking about Rafiq, and a lot of the times with Rafiq, you want to go with equipment and such like that. And I was just thinking, you know, blue and white have some really, really good enchantments. Mm-hmm. And so they're just, I was thinking about it, and then it hit me about with all of the bestow creatures and how you could make a Voltron deck and you could have a bunch of the bestow creatures because they're good either way. If you don't have a guy, suddenly you will have one.
Right.
And if not, you can just load it onto something else. And then also going with just the same colors of having hexproof, which means you guys are going to be safe. So I was thinking of all the cool hexproof creatures, and then it came to, you know, Geist and Narset, and even as lowly as the little invisible stalker.
One of my favorite cards, by the way.
Yeah, it's just the tiny pinger. I mean, and also True Name Nemesis as well.
Oh, right. From one person specifically, yeah.
Yeah, for one person. So it gets down to one of those where sometimes you just want to kill one person. Hopefully everyone realizes that you're not going to hurt them.
Right. A True Name Nemesis dropping onto the board and targeting one person is politically very great because everyone's like, okay, cool. I know
I'm not scared of that thing
at all. Yeah, I'm not scared of that. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. And then at that point, you hope you can throw on as many enchantments on it as possible that give it protection from all colors and creatures and things.
Yeah,
and then they can't get rid of it after.
Then they're like, oh crap, that thing can still kill me, even though he named somebody else.
Yeah, as soon as you drop Spectre Warden, everyone just goes, that card, dang it.
Well, I think also it's really cool to go with an enchantment, and this is really an aura theme, you know, because it's just pretty rare. We don't see that a lot. Like, most Voltron decks are using equipment, because equipment are sort of more safe. In that, if the creature out from under the equipment dies, most of the time your equipment's going to stick around.
Right.
And auras are sort of historically risky.
Yeah.
They're risky because, you know, a lot of good auras are like, oh, if the creature dies, the aura is gone too. So you can just get kind of blown out. So you don't see a lot of aura-based enchantment decks. So it's kind of cool to see one. I think that makes it unique in a way, which is cool. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and to that means you got to kind of figure out some tricks, like I said, with the hexproof, or even like running the deck. I run Leyline of Anticipation in it to give you flash, so I can flash Shu Young in at the end of a turn. He'll have haste.
They're not ready for it.
Yeah.
And any sorcery speed stuff won't have to worry about that. Plus, that gets pretty fun if I've got something like a retether and they've killed him a couple of times and I've got enchantments in the graveyard during their attack step. I suddenly do that, add the extra two, and give them all enchantments and double strike and usually death.
Retether is an insane card. It's replenish, but for auras.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. It's 3 and a white for a sorcery. Return each aura card from your graveyard to play. Only creatures can be enchanted this way. 4 mana, everything comes back.
Pretty good.
Pretty good, yeah.
Let's talk about some of the big enchantments, because I think that's the sort of coolest part of the deck. I mean, for me anyway, because I always look at these cards and I'm like, I'm just too scared to play them. You know?
Yeah,
so
I
this
agree.
Is the deck where it's the right place to play them.
The first one actually is one that I've passed over multiple times in my binder, being like, oh, that's so I want to, but I don't want to. Like every time. And it's Angelic Destiny.
Oh yeah.
Which is an amazing card. It's 2 and 2 white, so 4 total. Enchant creature. Enchanted creature gets +4/+4, has flying and first strike, and is an angel in addition to its other types. When enchant creature dies, return Angelic Destiny to its owner's hand.
So the downside is a little bit mitigated on this card.
Right, because you get it back, kind of like Rancor. You know?
As long as they don't exile it.
Yeah.
Or unsummon it or something.
And the problem with it as well is that if it's on your commander, your Shu Young, if you send your commander back to the command zone, you won't get it back.
Right.
It has to go to the graveyard.
For any other creatures that I have out there, it's usually worthwhile.
It's +4/+4 flying in first strike for 4 mana.
For 4 mana.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's a beating. Do you find that you normally are suiting up Shu Yuns because commander damage, or are you often suiting up another creature?
Shu Yun usually is the first target, unless they're playing a lot of dedicated removal that I know of, like, and they're going to get rid of him off the first time, or they know how dangerous he is. If I cast him on, like, turn 3, I'm looking to suit him up turn 4 with something big.
Right,
and just bash.
Yeah, or if I can get it earlier with, you know, maybe a Lucky Soul Ring or something, I'm going to be putting something on him. And sometimes it's just as simple as popping a Curiosity on him, and then hitting that double strike so I can get a couple extra cards. But I'm always looking at the commander damage. If I've got somebody set up and lined up for that, I like to pop it a little early. So if somebody gets a little crazy and I need to get in some unblockable damage, if I can do that, it's I don't have to try to get 21 commander damage. I only have to get maybe 15 or 16.
Right.
Which sounds crazy, but it's actually pretty easy to do once it gets into like turn 6 or 7.
Yeah, because all he has to be is like a 7-7 or
yeah.
so.
Yeah, this feels like a snowball that once it starts going down the hill gets just deadlier and deadlier the bigger it grows because the,
oh, yeah.
I mean, you just have more gas to, you know, do stuff with.
Yeah, the Silent Tempest turns into a rather noisy hurricane.
Indeed.
Shoot you in the noisy hurricane. There's a card I really liked on here that I may not have thought of. Is Afara's Enlightenment? Afara? Mm-hmm. Afara?
Afara.
Afara. She's not a Klosa.
Ifara. Ifura.
They always come up with these names that just make me sound as geeky as possible when I say them.
And this one's all, kind of a tongue twister, too.
Yeah.
You can barely get it out.
So it's one and Azorius, so 3 mana total, 1 white-blue. Enchantment aura, it says enchant creature. When Afara's Enlightenment enters the battlefield, put a 1/1 counter on enchanted creature. Enchanted creature has flying. And then this next part, which I thought was really interesting, is whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control, you may return Afara's Enlightenment to its owner's hand.
Oh, that's really nice, actually.
Yeah, because it allows you to not only prowess Shuyun, but also something that can, you know, you can use
play
as the
again.
Catalyst to yeah. activate his double strike ability, like when maybe you don't have... Because do you ever find that you don't have a non-creature spell in hand sometimes and you want one?
Mm-hmm.
There's been some times if there has been... I should probably put a Wheel of Fortune here just looking at it now. But if it's like a time spiral that doesn't go off or someone does a big draw spell or like a windfall or something, a lot of people are running those, and I end up with nothing but lands... or in like, if I can get just a small creature to pop out with that, suddenly I can start doing that with recurring and at least get a little bit more damage in.
Yeah, because it also keep the counter will stay, so it, mm-hmm. it does give the bump. It's you'll lose the flying, I guess. But yeah, it just seems like a good way to sort of have a repeatable way to activate Shuyun's ability to give somebody double strike.
Right, and also you can play it on someone else too. Let's say
yeah.
Shuyun is
yeah.
now,
yep.
You know, what's the what are
I've
those
had,
cards that stop it from attacking or blocking?
I actually had someone cast a pacifism on him.
There you go, yeah.
And then you know, just being able to do that. I don't think I had the Afara's Enlightenment, but at the same point, he was taken out, but he was still in the game. So any other prowess stuff just has to go to someone else. That Afara's
right.
Enlightenment
right.
then can go to someone else to give that creature the evasion. Because usually flying is sometimes flying is all you really need.
I mean, you can
yeah,
if you're in a game with it with 4 players or so, you can almost always find one person that doesn't have flying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? So it's usually like, oh, I got flying. Oh, I can at least kill somebody.
That's true. And the interesting thing is, too, is after you play another creature, you're usually doing it after combat, so the flying does not matter as much anymore, and you won't need the flying to block in that case. So when you bring it back to your hand in the second main phase, like you can just play it in your first main the next
right,
time and have
right.
that flying for whoever you want to swing next time.
Yeah.
So right. the next section I sort of have marked down, we already talked about bestow creatures, but the next one is sort of like creatures that like enchantments.
Oh, yes.
This mm. is, yeah, this is something you talked about earlier. So you do sort of have some tutor-type effects in here because there's creatures that'll go find stuff like...
Boonweaver Giant.
Yeah, you want
to read
him?
Yeah, he's a big boy.
I liked playing this guy in Limited. I had him and Spectre Ward in the Limited deck.
Oh, in Limited? That's
turn
just
seven
mean.
Is just like, guess who loses? You! but he's a 7 mana for a 4/4, 6 and a white. So immediately it's like, hold on, there's got to be something good here. And it is good. It's even better in Commander. When Boonweaver Giant enters the battlefield, you may search your graveyard, hand, and or library for an aura card and put it onto the battlefield attached to Boonweaver Giant. If you search your library this way, then you shuffle it.
So it cheats an aura into play onto
from
him.
Anywhere, except for
See,
Exile.
Just a tutor. See, there's a couple
yeah,
of ones.
Yeah, he's also
I mean,
a recursion
there's
guy.
There's Heliod's
yeah.
Pilgrim, and there's a couple of tutors. But
he's like
yeah,
a
this
Stoneforge
is, this is a guy who's
yeah.
looking in his closet, and he's looking to suit up. And usually he gets suited up with Eldrazi Conscription. But
yeah, that's what I was
going to
say.
Else.
Why would it ever be something else? What's yeah. better? Eldrazi Conscription, we've mentioned a couple times. I'll read it really quick. It's
kind of the big daddy of
yeah,
auras.
It's 8 colorless mana for a tribal enchantment Eldrazi Aura. It says enchant creature. Enchanted creature gets +10/+10. Yes, you heard that correctly. And has Trample and Annihilator. Annihilator means whenever the creature attacks, defending player sacrifices that many permanents. So
all the Eldrazi have means, Annihilator. Yeah,
Annihilator 2 means just by turning it sideways, they have to sacrifice two permanents.
Oof. Yeah.
And then they got to deal with the +10/+10 trample thing also, you know.
So yeah, suddenly they have like a 14/14. I did it with Bruna. It was fun because with her...
I saw that screenshot. I almost vomited.
It's so much fun. But sometimes I don't have, like with like a Boonweaver, if I need something that's going to stick around or I need life, I can snag something that can give me lifelink. Even though I think the only thing I have is at this point a Daybreak Coronet, which makes it a little awkward because you have to have an enchantment on it already.
Oh, right, right, to get all that other stuff, yeah.
There are, if I've already got something like that, say maybe I have the Eldrazi Conscription in my hand, like that's actually really bad. But if I need unblockable, I've got like Tricks of the Trade to give it unblockability. Penman's Aura, which can give it Shroud. If I know
we talked about that card last episode. That card's a house.
Yeah, or if I just want, if I know that the only way they can get me is through damage, I can just pop on a Spectral Ward. And at just that point, like you said, he's just a 6/6 beef. But at the same point, you can just throw other stuff. There's a lot of the cards. I could go get an Arcanum Wings, which is the future shifted card that has the aura swap. So if I've got the, well, Conscription in my hand, I can just, boom, put that out there, and then hopefully the next turn, maybe I can't cast the Conscription, but I can swap it in.
Oh, wow. So how many cards have aura swap? By the way, aura swap
just
is
one.
Just Arcanum Wings?
Yeah, it's time-shifted.
I believe so.
Oh, geez. So
it's from Future Sight, right?
Yeah. Arcanum Wings is one in the blue for an enchantment aura, and you enchant a creature, it gives it flying, and then you have aura swap for two in the blue, which is exchange this aura with an aura card in your hand. That's really crazy.
Again, it's a card that cheats mana cost, which, as we always talk about on the show, anything that cheats a mana cost is going to be super powerful.
Anything from this set is going to be super powerful.
Yeah, Future Sight was, a lot of the cards were mechanics that were going to, you know, quote unquote, exist in the future of Magic, but didn't exist yet. And
this is one of them that is the only one of a kind, Or this is the only card with aura swap on it.
Seems pretty good.
Interesting. You think they would have made it like some kind of cycle back in the day? Or maybe they had some other kind of swaps. But either way, Future Sight, home of many cards that are incredibly powerful.
And totally unique.
Yeah, totally unique too. I like it. And different art style too. The whole border thing really threw me off the first time I saw one of those cards.
Super pretty.
Yeah.
Another card I see on here is Hero of Eroas.
Who's seeing actually some standard play.
Yeah, seeing some standard play, and it's a really simple card. It's one and a white for a 2/2 human soldier, but it says aura spells you cast cost one less to cast. So that seems like it's a little bit of ramp, and then whenever it's got that heroic ability, whenever you cast a spell that targets the Hero of Eroas, put a 1/1 counter on it. But I would think that the ability to like reduce the casting cost of all your enchantments by one is pretty good.
It helps a lot. A lot of the cards cost, you know, double color. There's a lot of two color types, or even two of one color. So anytime you can get any mana out of there, you know, try to squeeze a little bit out of there and get just some of the spells a little bit cheaper, it helps. And it goes a long way to help you be able to get to your double strike ability.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say is like part of the thing is like if you cast a enchantment that costs five mana, like you want two mana left to activate Xu Yun's ability and give something double strike. And
totally.
Now you're getting pretty mana hungry. So it seems like anything that can either ramp you or reduce the casting cost is going to be pretty valuable.
Yeah, and I mean, it turns something like an Eel Umbra into a one blue, keep my guy alive for one of your removal spells because he's got totem armor. And it makes a lot of the things just a little bit cheaper. And yeah, it infinitely helps you out.
Yeah, I noticed you had a lot of the Umbra enchantments on there. And is that mostly to just protect the creature from getting removed?
Yeah, those are the Eel Umbra is the flash one. So I can do it quickly. And the Crab Umbra was the cheapest one. And it untaps, which can help as well. So it's like, I was looking, and when I first started through it, I threw out all the totem armors, and I was like, oh, these are all great. And then some of them just aren't as good, or some of them are just flat out way too expensive.
Uh-huh. Right. I mean, the goal with this deck is to just swing in with either a Voltron Commander or go somewhat wide and just, just whoever they don't block, you give double strike to or whatever. So I can see, I mean, obviously being able to protect your creatures with, like, your Eel Umbra at flash speed is incredibly important. How often do you find that you're on defense where something like Crab Umbra, where you can untap your creatures to potentially block or something, is actually pertinent?
If it's a long game and I haven't really done a whole lot of stuff and I'm just kind of hanging out and I haven't actually really attacked someone, or I've kind of spread it out where I'm just building up to maybe take a couple people out in successive turns, then I can kind of, that comes into place. Usually if it gets into that, I'm hoping that I would have like a Bruna out or one of my enchantments that give vigilance as opposed to having the Umbra mana.
Right, right.
But at the same point, it's a quasi-vigilance, so sometimes it does come into play. It really comes into play if I've got Spirit Link on something, and because if I'm punching someone for a lot, they're going to try to come back. And if I can have something that's untapped with Life Link, then my life's a lot better.
Right, and just really deters people from swinging into you as well.
A question I have is something, is like, how often are you able to kill more than one player in a turn? Like, that's something that I think commander decks, like, very often want to be able to do, is, like, suddenly burst forward and take down two or three different people. Have you considered putting in some of the, like, extra combat, add another combat after this one type cards?
Like Scourge of the Throne or whatever.
Yeah.
Or even, like, Relentless Assault, too. Yeah. Those are good ones, and I haven't really thought about those. It'd probably be better than some of the cards I have in here. Like, right now, I just threw an Outpost Siege to see if that would be any good.
Yeah, for card draw.
Just it's more card draw, and it might be able to be something like that. I guess, I don't see the Dragons one doing a whole lot for me in this deck. So it's one of those cards that, since it only does one thing, it might not be worthwhile. And I might just want to try to find a Chandra if I'm going to go that way.
It feels like you're in blue, too. You could find the card draw that you want. You know, Outpost Siege is decent card draw, but I feel like blue's probably got better stuff than that.
Yeah, and the only other problem with cards that give, like, the Relentless Assault effects is they're usually really expensive.
Yeah, true.
Uh-huh. And I'm already mana-starved in this deck. It's so hard to want to do all of the things you want to do because you're essentially adding two mana to at least one spell a turn.
Right.
Right, so...
So all of a sudden you don't have extra.
I can't really go too crazy with it, which turns it into really a glass cannon. Like I said, you can take someone out, and then you just hope they don't have the removal.
The crackback or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also noticed that in your artifacts, you have a lot of the signets, like Azorius Signet and Boros Signet, which lets you add either blue or white and tap one, or red or white. And I'm assuming you need a lot of ramp to just be able to trigger Shuyun reliably, right?
Yeah, it's that, and there's so much color intensity and needed in this deck. It's, like I said, a lot of double blue and double white. That is pretty much just a blue-white deck with a splash of red. There's, like, four red cards I've put in now, and that's just because I added a Dax Faden and a Dax Duplicate.
Oh, those cards are so good. I love Dax Duplicate.
Yeah, so, yeah, I got actually wrecked by a duplicate earlier today, and I've realized how good it is.
It is very good.
It is very good, yeah. I think it's my favorite clone, actually.
Yeah, when they duplicate your Bruna, attack and steal all of your enchantments.
That's the world.
You're having a bad day.
Well, also the signets and all the ramp mana rocks will trigger the prowess and be able to trigger the double strike ability on Shuyun. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it seems like those are really they're awesome in EDH in general, but probably even better in this deck because, like you said, you need the color, but also they do something. Like, they affect the board, you know. So that's pretty cool. Let's talk about some cards that you may not think of in a deck like this. One you brought up that is pretty interesting, and you know what? I got to confess, like, I've sort of written this card off, and I sort of just never use it. But there are probably some decks that I should have this in, and it's Opal Palace. I'll read it really quick, and then you can say what you said to me earlier, Rev, which I think is smart. It's a land. You can tap it for one colorless, but also you can tap one and tap Opal Palace and add to your mana pool one mana of any color that's in your commander's color identity. If you spend this mana to cast your commander, it enters the battlefield with a number of 1/1 counters on it equal to the number of times it's been cast from the command zone. Very interesting card. I haven't considered this card in a long time, and this is a really good deck for it. Do you want to talk about your reasoning for adding it in, Rev?
Yeah, the main reason is, first off, Shuyun is a pretty cheap commander at only 3 mana. And the way this deck is built, I expect him to die a lot. Mm-hmm. Just because if I take someone out, they're going to be like, oh, well, I'm going to have to kill it now. And rightfully so. And so then I come back and it's like, well, I need to cast it again. He's going to cost 5 mana, and that's fine, whatever. And then I realized I was looking at Opal Palace is that the first time you cast him, if you wait a turn at 4 mana, he becomes a 4-3,
right.
Which is 4 commander damage by itself, but usually it's double strike, and that's 8 commander damage.
Right.
They kill him. The next time he comes back, 6 mana, it's still pretty doable, and you don't even have to do it if you don't want to. But then now he comes back as a 5-4, a lot harder to kill.
Right.
Right, right.
Well, basically, Opal Palace on him gives him 2 power also instead of 1. I mean, mm-hmm. if you consider the double strike thing.
And not to be complete, I mean, like, you could also... This is color fixing. It's not the best.
Yeah.
But if you're really desperate to get that extra red or white sure. or whatever, the Opal Palace will do it for you because you don't necessarily have to cast a commander with it. This isn't my Marchesa deck, and it is the best land I can ask for.
Well, yeah, you want 1-1 counters. So.
Yeah, exactly. Like yeah, I would much rather play her in turn 5 with a Opal Palace than on turn 4 without one, because that way you guarantee she's going to recur in some way at least. So it's a really nice tech land, and in this case, because anyone that knows what they're doing should be killing Shuyun as fast as possible before you get any number of hexproof things on her.
But you get to this interesting place where Prosh has this sort of thing where you you don't really want to kill him because they come back stronger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you can get there with Shuyun where it's like, crap, I kill that thing. He's going to cast it with the Opal Palace, and now it's going to be, you know, it's going to be bigger than it was last time. Like, that's kind of a pain in the butt.
Absolutely. And that's one of those things also. If you can kind of tell, you know, guide one of the people in political games, it's amazing because you're like, okay, I'm not going to attack you. Don't kill him yet. And then maybe you can get something out there. And then by the time it gets to that point, you've got a couple counters on them after they've actually killed them.
Yeah, and they're like,
them.
Crap.
Yeah. You can even be like, hey, you can kill him now. And you're like, hey, I'm just going to kill you next turn with a bigger one.
Right.
Yeah.
Another card that you have on here that I think most people maybe wouldn't have thought of, and you mentioned earlier, is Geist of St. Traft.
Mm-hmm. Geist is so good.
Yeah, it's just a really good card in general. It's 1 and, again, Azoria, so white and a blue. So 3 total for a legendary creature, Spirit Cleric. It's a 2/2. It has hexproof. Whenever Geist of St. Traft attacks, put a 4/4 white angel creature token with flying onto the battlefield, tapped and attacking. Exile the token at the end of combat. So,
and it's one of the best hexproof creatures
maybe ever.
Ever, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it sees modern play, right? Does it see Legacy at all?
I don't know about Legacy. Maybe on the fringe, but I'm not too in tune with Legacy. But it's hexproof. It gives an added damage bonus with the thing. And it's like, unless they can deal with enchantments and get rid of the enchantments on the creature, suddenly, anyway, if I give it flying, it's suddenly now just a big flying dude that can make
with
another
hexproof.
Flying dude with
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and then if they can block it, you make an angel, and all of a sudden you can give either one of them double strike.
Right, and they can't reliably even block your guy because you should have any number of tricks to just kill them with Geist. Because a 2-2
absolutely.
Is not very intimidating, but a 2-2 with huge upside with open
mana
is terrifying.
A 2-2 with Eldrazi Conscription on it that has hexproof is pretty terrifying.
Yeah, exactly.
Or even just as simple as putting an Aqueous Form on it, suddenly it's unblockable, and you can't deal with it, and then it's also hitting with an angel too.
Yeah.
Well, and the thing is, too, they might not want to block that angel even if they can, because if you give it double strike, then all of a sudden it'll take something with it that it wouldn't normally, and that doesn't cost you anything. Like, you usually don't want to block, like, what is essentially a free creature from them and lose a card. Like, you don't want to trade your card for nothing.
Yeah.
So people will be hesitant, I think, to block that 4-4 angel, and then all of a sudden it can hit them for 8 in the face.
Yeah. Now, one thing I'm curious about is when I started building this deck, for me, I was thinking about what I should do and where I should keep my sort of like priorities. And my priorities when I made my very rough version was cantrips. And a cantrip, for those that don't know, is a spell that essentially when you cast it does something, but very importantly at the bottom says draw a card. So it replaces itself in a lot of ways. And I thought that would be a nice way to do it because you're going to be pumping through so many non-creature spells to trigger this ability on Shuyun. But instead you went with the aura route. And have you found any like card draw troubles, or what's your general?
There's the thing with all the mana restrictions with the deck, it turns out a lot of the times I'm looking at casting one spell a turn and to push through. So a lot of the times I haven't had problems with running out of cards. But if they've got any hand disruption, it gets really hairy pretty quickly. Usually, if they've got something to keep my creatures locked down, if they've got like the Sheola Dread or a way to make me keep losing creatures, I'll just be sitting there for a while, not being able to do anything. And that's one of the big weaknesses with the deck.
Yeah, it's hard to recover from
board wipes or like Shieldred effects.
And so, yeah, like there's not a whole lot of card draw in there. I mean, I've got the Core Spirit Dancer, but that's dependent on her staying out, which she usually doesn't. Curiosity, Brainstorm, just because Brainstorm's one of the best card draws out there.
Right.
And then other than something like a Dak Faden, I don't have a whole lot of card draw. So it's probably one of the hardest spots to have in there. But I didn't really want to sacrifice the theme for it just to have more card draw.
So I tried
to incorporate that in with it as much as I possibly could.
Well, this is a good way to transition into a section we like to cover with every deck, which is how, if I'm playing against the deck, to fight it. And you've mentioned some things, like I can imagine board wipes are pretty.
Yeah, those have to be pretty rough.
Yeah, because I mean that does get around Hexproof. That does get around like a lot of the sort of defenses that you've set up about creature removal.
Oh, absolutely. Like any sort of recurring sacrifice effects like Shieldred, like if someone puts that out there, and it's really easy because if they're just running like a reanimation package, or one person is and someone discards it for whatever reason, suddenly it's out there and I can't do anything. That was one of the reasons why I was running Assemble the Legion, and I think I'm still going to keep on running it because at that point it gives me a little bit of defense. But spot removal before Hexproof and board wipes will really, or even like sacrifice effects like a Tribute to Hunger has been one that I've run into a couple times where it will just get you. Even Crackling Doom, if you're running like a Mardu deck, like a Kelly.
Oh, yeah,
the
all of a sudden, just your biggest thing. You got to get,
Yeah, and like the biggest thing is always going to be the guy that I have that has 27 power, you know?
It paints a pretty big target on his back.
I would think that something like Terminus would be a big pain, too.
Terminus and any tuck effects, like a Spell Crumple or something, will essentially ruin me. Because then I've got to rely on the back of the very few creatures I have. And that's another reason why I run the Bestow creatures.
Right.
Right.
But there's also no way to go find Shu Yun if they tuck it, right? Like, it's not like you're in green or black, so there's, like, no way to go find your tucked general.
There's no. Yeah, none.
Yeah, that's pretty brutal. One thing I wrote down...
I promise
down,
I won't tuck your general if we play. No hinder from me.
I make no such promises.
Well, who said I kept my promises?
Right?
Jeez.
Another thing I wrote down, which is thankfully rare in the format, but every once in a while you see some sort of like mass like tranquility type effect, like destroy all enchantment type effect. It seems like that would wreck.
That it really will, especially if I start kind of going overboard, seeing how big I can make something and getting silly. And that's just the same reason why you wouldn't, you know, play all of your creatures out if you knew your opponent ran a Wrath of God effect.
Right,
right.
And the mana constraints on the deck as well kind of help that a little bit.
Right, so you can't just spew your whole hand out.
The deck can't cast everything. I mean, if I wanted to get cheeky, I would put Omniscience back in here because I do have an Academy Rector and I can just go get it. And that's really fun sometimes.
Or Narset can just play it too.
Yeah, exactly. So sometimes you can get away with that sort of stuff, but it's the deck kind of has its own limitations set on it just due to resources.
Interesting.
I'm glad you actually have Narset in here because there was a lot of hubbub about her being a broken commander because the stuff that she can obviously put out into play and cheat into play is insane. But in this deck, because enchantments matter, her ability is actually really relevant, which is really nice.
Plus,
actually,
she has like one of your key words, which is Hexproof.
Yeah, definitely.
So,
And that was one of the reasons why she went in. I have a Narset commander deck, and it's just all good stuff, and it has Omniscience in it, because,
come on,
if I can cast it and cast everything else, let's do it.
Yeah, may as well go to town.
Right.
All right, so let's talk about ways to counter their counters. I'm sort of surprised that I don't see Avacyn on the list just because it seems like she protects everything even better.
She's uber expensive, and I actually don't have one. I think I have one in paper.
I only have one.
Oh, so we're going to see one in Vegas?
Yeah.
We might see one in Vegas. Another going back.
All things are possible in Vegas.
Yeah, it seems like indestructibility would be good to go along with your Hexproof because... Then all of a sudden you're down to only Wrath that's exile.
Wraths and
not even spot removal exile will do it. Like it'd have to be like Merciless Eviction
would do it, right? Yeah, Merciless Eviction would do it.
Yeah.
Something like a Darksteel Plate or something would be pretty good to put in there because at least like as few equipment as I have in here, like none, it would probably be worthwhile to have one in there.
Yeah, because all of a sudden you're just narrowing the amount of stuff that can hurt you down pretty far, like down to only Wrath Exiles, basically. So
yeah, and I mean it's one of those that you're not going to see all the time, but I kind of like it in those terms of like, oh hey, look at that, now I have a cool card.
The other thing I noticed, you don't have any counter magic.
No, I started with it, but then it gets away. I was able to pretty much kind of overload it with the theme, I decided not to run counter spells in this because, to be perfectly honest, I can sometimes just leave up 2 blue mana and people will completely
no respect
think,
it.
That is really interesting because that's true. You have a free counter and just by leaving mana up with this deck. Any blue deck, really.
Yeah, and so I have, I mean, other than, you know, Cyclonic Rift to bounce something back of theirs to make, you know, do something, or eventually just, you know, cast it for the 7 mana reason why you put it in the deck. I don't have a whole lot of that because it's not really that much of an interactive deck on the surface. Like you said, with the politicalness, you can make it into an interactive deck by telling, like, who do you want me to kill, to somebody else? But there's not a whole lot of defensive measures. I have an Aetherize in there, so if someone tries to kick back, sometimes that works out.
Uh-huh.
But a lot of the times I'm just basing it on just kind of battering at them. If I've got something like a Daybreak Coordinate where I have Lifelink, I can just usually hit with a lot of damage, even if I can't get through for whatever reason. They got a chump block or something, I can't poke through.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes just life gain can get me out of any sort of danger.
Right. I'm assuming this deck races better than most decks just because you have the ability to choose whoever you want to get double strike and all that.
Yeah. I mean, you can't race this deck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you can race it with just having enough removal and tough.
But that's not racing.
And,
you can control it maybe, but I don't think you can race it. I don't think you're ever going to be like, I'm outracing your 27-27 double striker.
I would like to see this go heads up with a Rafik deck and to see what happens there.
Oh, that would be fun.
Because you share 2 colors. You share white and blue. Yeah. But Rafik has more creature fetching, and you just have more, I guess, burn.
This
you're
deck
not really using the red.
I'm not hardly using the red. I mean, I use Elemental Mastery because that's another way. If I've got like one thing that can't poke through, maybe I can get a whole bunch of elemental creature tokens.
Right, right. I actually like that a lot because I think always having some kind of... It also helps if you're trying to combat the token strategy, you know, being able to at least stop the bleed in some way if you get that out.
It's interesting about Assemble the Legion, and I think, it's a pretty smart choice just to have... Because that card's so powerful that sometimes it can just win you the game, and just having a card that's sort of outside of your main, you know, theme, but it's just 1 or 2 cards that give you an alternate win condition can be good.
Right.
Because at least that way you don't just lose to like one thing every time. Like if they have a Tuck effect, well, Assemble the Legion might still get there.
Right. And Assemble the Legion is an enchantment that's 3, a red and a white. And basically at the beginning of your upkeep, you get to put a muster counter on it. And then you put a 1/1 red and white soldier creature token with haste on the battlefield for each counter on Assemble the Legion.
So it continues to grow. So if you've had it out for 5 turns, you're getting 5/1s.
Yeah, every upkeep, which is pretty sweet.
I mean, I've seen games where Assemble Legion just wins. Like, nobody manages to get rid of it for 5 turns, and then it's just like, well...
Well, it's a great little engine that has a lot of upside, and oftentimes it's like people pay attention to Doubling Season and like Food Chain when you put it out, but no one really looks at Assemble the Legion and goes, oh boy, that's a must deal with. And then you're popping out 10 tokens a turn, and you're like, uh-oh.
Well, and you can still put all your auras on this stuff, and they got haste.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
it's pretty, I like that card a lot in this deck. So I guess we've already really talked about the strategy for playing it. We've covered most of the bases. Is there anything, you know, when you're playing this deck, what do you not want to see on the other side of the table?
The color blue.
No, the color blue isn't that bad because usually they can't get going. Now, if it's black or if it's like black, green or black, white, those are the issues because usually they've got the board wipes or even just the targeted spot removal because of how good it is. And black also has the sacrifice effects.
Yeah, edict effects feel like they would be really tough.
Yeah, the edicts are rough. White has a lot of people, if they're not running enchantment removal, they're usually running like... some of the good ones, which are like the white one that exiles 1, but it will exile 2 enchantment artifacts during the main phase.
Right.
Yeah. Return to Dust is kind of the best
exactly.
one.
And so they can combat, if they can't deal with a creature, they can usually deal with the enchantments. They also have a lot of exile effects, which are pretty rough. Exiling like the graveyard can be tough. Also, just exiling any enchantments really makes it rougher on me getting through stuff.
So how do you feel about what happens to this deck when someone, for instance, just is able to consistently remove Shuyun? Are you able to still operate? Because you have all these enchantments and stuff, but they don't necessarily have to go on Shuyun, but they don't necessarily also get double strike from, you know, his ability.
Yeah, at that point it turns into something kind of a different monster where I'm still trying to load up some, you know, whatever creatures I have left. But if they're consistently able to get rid of him, I do have to kind of just sit back and hopefully be able to either use something like a Dax Duplicate or a Phyrexian Metamorph to get one of their creatures, because usually at that point they're going to be far enough ahead. I mean, I run one Day of Judgment in the deck, but that's it, and it's not really all that easy to get to.
Right.
So that and the Cyclonic Rift to try to, you know, maybe kill a little bit of time. And hopefully be able to load up something that'll be able to stop what's going on. Sometimes it works, and sometimes if they can get that down, you just have to realize that that's one of the weaknesses of the deck.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you find that, I mean, I'm guessing on Modo, you don't really get the chance to play with someone multiple times in a row. In real life, you do, and I think after you play a deck like this a few times, do you find that it has sort of a high chance of someone being like, all right, I have the hard counter to this, or I have something that can deal with this more effectively? Do you think it falls to that as well?
If you're with a normal play group, you've got to expect the people that are going to be able to put in something that will ruin you. With this deck, it's Auramancer, I think, is the card, which I have in my things. And sometimes I put it in the meta, like on Magic Online, will change where everyone will be suddenly playing a specific deck, like I said, with like Nekusar. And so there was a little while there, a lot of enchantments were going around. So
Right.
Or a thief, sorry.
Yeah, or a thief is
three colorless and a blue. It says when it goes to the graveyard, you gain control of all enchantments. If someone plays that against me, I'm suddenly in trouble. But it's also kind of weird because I have auras as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those ones that sometimes they, if you have someone that you're playing with consistently, they're going to be able to find a card. If you make someone mad enough because you win a lot, they'll find the card that will
beat you. They'll meta you out.
Yeah. You know how you get around that, though?
Oh.
You play Aura Thief, too.
Play your own Aura Thief.
And yeah, that's why I was running one for a while, too.
That would be awesome. Aura Thief. Oh, yeah?
Aura Thief. And there's just two other players being like, guys, you took every one of my enchantments.
Oh, yeah.
Ugh, fine.
We talked about it last week with Enchanted Evening. I mean, obviously, you don't have green, so, it's green, right? Green and white, right?
Yeah. I do really like Aura Thief, though. It's a fun card.
Well, it's fun if you play it and steal everybody's stuff. It's not fun if they do it to you.
Look, I haven't had someone play it against me yet, so until then, it is a fun card.
Remember, fun is subjective.
Yeah, exactly. True. Very nice.
All right, well, cool. I'm excited to play against this deck.
Especially because it's going to evolve by the time MMA 2 comes around. So.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, super, super stoked to put this one to paper, actually, too. So
I'm super stoked to see it in paper.
Yeah, and then we'll have like a Rafik Aura Thief off, or we'll figure something out. But we'll do the double strike.
Yeah, Jimmy's got a pretty mean Rafik deck.
Double strike crew. Yeah, and it's based off of our friend Craig's Rafik deck, which is more mean because it has more infect in it.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, he's got an infect Rafik deck that is pretty good.
Yeah, that's what being in green is nice for Rafik. You can definitely pull off some really powerful 1v1 interactions there.
Yikes! Yeah, surprise there.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, well, let's move on to the end step. I know, Jimmy, you've been chomping at the bit to talk about something not Magic related.
Justin, you're from Seattle, right?
Absolutely.
We all know what happened. So you guys will be listening to this a week and 2 days after the Super Bowl, because we're recording this on a Wednesday, the Wednesday after the Super Bowl. So the loss is still fresh in my mind. And there's been a lot of press about it, and I wanted to address all the haters and all the players. But one thing I just wanted to talk about was, I remember when I saw the play happen and Josh and I were screaming like, we're so ready. This is great. We just feed it to beast mode. We have three plays here and 20 seconds is more than enough. We have one timeout. We can totally do this. And then, of course, the Seahawks threw a game-ending interception. Malcolm Butler made a huge play and ended the Super Bowl and won. Tom Brady and Bill Belichick.
If you don't watch football, it's just one of those few moments in life where you go from the highest high to like the lowest low in like a heartbeat.
A heartbeat, yeah.
I mean, it's
like watching the Death Star blow up Alderaan after you've been promised by Grand Moff Tarkin that he's not going to do it.
It's wow. pretty soul-crushing.
That's what it felt like to me. And anyway, after the game was over, everyone was just screaming at Pete and Daryl Bevel, who was our offensive coordinator, about the play call, saying it was the worst. Straight up. Saying it was the worst play call in history.
I love Pete Carroll, but I think it is the worst play call in history. I mean, listen, everybody makes mistakes. It's fine. But I think that's hard to dispute that it's at least among the worst play calls. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. Anyway, but the thing I wanted to point out is that, I don't know if you guys remember this, but the Patriots went 15-0 in the season and almost went undefeated for an entire season of NFL, including the Super Bowl, and they lost at the last moment to a miraculous catch from the New York Giants. I had a blast watching that game. And then they did it again, and Mario Manningham did this like another amazing catch and ended their Super Bowl hopes. And after seeing my Seahawks lose in that fashion to something that felt to that degree, right? It's like a last minute thing. It made me realize that it's okay, it's all right. There's a lot of history behind and in front of us, and I've been cheering for the Seahawks for like 15 years, so I've seen some. I mean, not making the playoffs, I think, is way worse than losing at the last second in the Super Bowl. So I've made my peace with it. I have really good friends from Boston that are visiting this week, and they're wearing Patriots gear. And all I can do is give them a high five and say, see you next year, and hopefully we'll maybe we shall meet again. That's my end step. Do you have anything to say, Josh? Go Hawks? I know, right? I know. 12th man.
Yeah,
here we go.
Go Hawks.
Raise the banner, baby.
Still love you, Pete. I don't know. You got anything, Rev?
Yeah, I want to throw this out there because we're going to talk a little bit about it on a future, I think, on the Wednesday BJ's Geek Nation. So I think tomorrow's actually. There's a movie out there on Xbox Video called Atari Game Over, and it's a little over an hour, and it's all about finding about the urban legend that they buried a whole bunch of E.T. extraterrestrial cartridges in the desert in a landfill there. So it goes over the history of like the downfall of Atari and the meteoric rise at the beginning and all these all-star programmers who were like kind of like the rock stars of their day in those sort of terms. Mm-hmm. And like it was actually really, really cool, really interesting. And I thought it was a fun little look at the 70s and 80s gaming.
Very cool. What's it called again?
It's called Atari Game Over, and I know you can get pay on it for Vimeo, but I saw it for free on Xbox Video because I think it's theirs. I think they put it together, and so it's pretty cool.
That's cool. That's like one of the the oldest sort of urban legends that may or may not be true. You have to watch the documentary to find out about Atari. Very interesting. Josh, do you have anything?
Yeah, my cool thing. Is there's this cool podcast called BJ Shea's Geek Nation.
Really? Tell me more about it.
Yeah, and it also comes out on Tuesdays, which is when you're listening to this podcast. And it just so happens that today, if you're listening on Tuesday, and if you aren't, it's cool because it's a digital media, so you can still go find it. Jimmy and I
will be on the show.
Yeah, we're
How
on
about
the show.
That?
How did that happen? You...
I mean, it's like we're almost like Project Almanac here, where we're time traveling to the future because we're recording this in the past. But we were it's on true. The show today.
Yeah.
With Rev on his show.
Through alternate timelines that you can somehow listen to in this one.
I need a chalkboard to map it all out exactly how it works, but
it's a great podcast.
And I'm pretty sure that it was much better because we were on it.
It will absolutely be much better because you guys are
on it. Yeah,
it
was Value Town.
You'll get to have some fun with Mono Nick when he tries to explain his sweet cards that he's brewed.
Ooh, I'm very excited for that.
Well, they're going to geek out about VJHS, I think.
Oh, I'm excited to talk about it with those guys. And I love the podcast, too, because it usually clocks in just around half an hour, and I think that's a really nice, digestible amount. Just like, for instance, driving home from work, you know, because usually you have to listen to like those limited resources podcasts over like 8 days.
And you can, or ours is usually like two.
Two,
it's,
yeah, definitely.
It's a drive to work and from
back,
work.
Yeah. But this makes, I think, your Tuesday all the sweeter. So if you guys want to find out more about where Rev on Fuego, Justin Robinson, originally found us, check out BJ Shea's Geek Nation. You can follow him on Twitter at BJ Geek Nation or just go to bjgeeknation.com.
And Rev, your Twitter is at Rev N Fuego, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely you can find all of that at BJ Geek Nation as well.
Cool. Right. Definitely and go hit that follow button and check us out on their cast. And
that's pretty much it.
Does I don't know why I said and. I didn't have anything else.
I was like, I looked at you and I was like, and what?
I said and then I was like, oh crap, why'd I say and? I don't have anything after that.
Oh, I know what you wanted to say. Go Hawks.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening.
All right, thanks for being on, Justin. It was great talking.
Thank you so much, you guys.
All right, we'll see you guys next week.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
3, 2, 1 Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's Angie.com.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.